Today is Monday morning, April 11th, 2016. It's the last year in the Kollel. The Kollel ends tomorrow, actually, before Pesach. We pick up again a week after Pesach, not the Sunday, Monday directly after, but the week afterwards. Regarding Pesach, it's interesting. I've gotten a slew of shaylat, and the only shaylat I get are in two categories. One category is legumes, you know, what you do. Particularly in Israel, it's a burning issue. But I want you to know that I feel very happy about my psak, which is my own doing over the decades, because I was told that Meir Lichtenstein gives exactly the same psak I give for exactly the same reasons. So I imagine Meir reached it on his own thinking. All right, he's not parroting me, but I felt very good about that because it always hurts me that I come from the Litvish world and I was Mate Neder and I still can't solve the problem of margarine as I spoke about the other day. So I was happy to hear that. I already know it from a year ago, exactly the same sock. The other problem, of course, is with Yontif Sheni. And some of the people who sat in this very shir are going back for Pesach and what they should do. So I always tell them, don't ask me. But they say, no, we want to hear your opinion. I say, all right, I'll tell you my opinion, but it's not a psak. And as I've said so many times, since I spoke with the Rav in Boston, and that's why Jay is wearing that Boston hat, I would imagine, I have to do what the Rav told me, and the Rav Taka held 100%. He said he asked his father, Reb Moshe quoted Reb Chaim, Reb Chaim quoted the Chacham Tzvi, and you know I gave shirim on this for a year and a half. It's among my finest shirim ever in the Sunday class many years ago. But the Rav Taka held, it's like a din of Megillah. Depends where your feet are. So whenever I've been in America for Yontif Sheni, or outside of, I've been in Australia for Yontif Sheni, I've been in South Africa, I've been in America, I've been in, I think even in Canada once for Yontif Sheni, I always keep two full days. The only difference is, because it's the Shulchan Aruch's psak, and this led me to many shiurim, as you know, do we have a right to rebel against the Shulchan Aruch? I gave shiurim years ago, not that many years ago, on the Kuntres Hashach, on Psak Halach, I think I spent a year and a half on it. So I dealt with this in great detail, and I can't repeat it now, but that's a very interesting question. Do we have a right to rebel against? That's the very question I asked Mori Urebi in 78, when he had to learn a little, you understand? And we had a long discussion on it, which I've integrated into my lectures, and I bring more sources to support what Rebbe told me, and I developed it, Kaniti Al Yedei Shinui. But the one thing I do is, after davening, I hide in the room, I put on tefillin with a tanai, without a bracha. If it's a yontif, then these are not tefillin, it's a kishut b'yama. If it's not yontif, then these are tefillin, and I say Shema Yisrael, I shouldn't be over on giving Eidut Sheka. That's the only compromise I make with the Shulchan Aruch's psak. But I tell people not to ask me, because this psak, the Rav's, not many people do it. And Rabbi Lichtenstein himself originally did what the Rav paskened. Years later, he switched to Reb Shlomo Zalman's psak. And I asked the Bar, and I said, why? He told me he became very close to Reb Shlomo Zalman, and he's the Mar of the Ara for him. And Reb Heschel Shechter also went against the Rav, and I spoke with him, I said, and he said, look, I said to Heschel, yeah, all right, you're your own man. So he left. Nevertheless, he, if you recall my shayurim and what was written, he did paskin like the Rav when pressed. There was a family from Beverly Hills, as I recall, going to Israel, and everyone was going to keep one day in Israel. And the girl or the boy, the teenager, was a Talmud of Reb Heschel, and they wanted to keep 2 days. And the parents were hysterical, so Reb Heschel backed down and said, okay, in your case, you can be samach on the Rav, and you can keep them at the most a day and a half l'chumra. But see, a day and a half l'chumra becomes a farce in Israel, because all you have to do is ask your Israeli brother to drive you around. That's what's wrong. He's doing the malacha. You're doing at the most an isa d'rabbanan. You're going into a car. He said, the Rabbanan, you can do it. Tzlani Malacha, you're right doing. You keep a day and a half lechumra. All right, it's a fascinating topic, but it's not the topic we want to deal with today. What we do want to deal with is the Lubavitcher Rebbe on baseball and Judaism. A Talmud sent me this with baseball opening day next week. Here are two stories about the Lubavitcher Rebbe on baseball. And I know the person who dealt with the Rebbe. Shimon Shtuck's father was friendly with the Rebbe. And Shtuck himself knew the Rebbe from the time before he assumed the movement's leadership. Yes, he was a Brooklyn boy growing up in Crown Heights. Of course he knew the Rebbe. He recalled an incident about 1951 when Shtuck was walking with a man and his son, both dedicated Brooklyn Dodger fans. They were en route to a game at nearby Ebbets Field. Now, if you know where the Rebbe lived, and 770 and President Avenue and Ebbets Field, you're talking, it's within 15 minutes walking, you can go to all three. Where the Rebbe lived, 770, and then to Ebbets Field. So suddenly Shtuck saw the Rebbe walking towards them, and he introduced the men to him. The Rebbe immediately began to talk to the pair, particularly the son, about baseball. The boy, and I'll put this is, I'm now saying this, looking at the Rebbe, seeing a guy with a beard dressed in black, assumed that the Rebbe was quite uninformed about baseball. Mentioned in passing that when the team that one favors is either winning or losing by a large margin, many spectators leave the game without bothering to wait for the end. Do the players leave? Asked the Rebbe. Of course not, the young man said. They're not allowed to leave. They stay to the end and keep trying to win. The Rebbe smiled at the young man. This is the lesson in Yiddishkeit I want to teach you. When you pray, when you put on tefillin, you're playing with the team. You're not just a spectator. You're in the game. You're not a fan who can leave the game early. You can either be a fan or a player. When it comes to Judaism, be a player. All right, that's one story about the Rebbe. As Yossi Ben Eliezer recalls, I accompanied my grandfather to a private audience with the Rebbe a month prior to my bat mitzvah. After speaking with my grandfather, the Rebbe turned to me and asked, which sport do you like most? In shock at the Rebbe's question, I answered, baseball. The Rebbe continued, do you like to play when there are two teams or just one? Rebbe, you cannot play baseball with just one term. Why not? The Rebbe asked, his face serious. I explained patiently, the whole game is to see who will triumph. Therefore, there must be two opposing teams. And who usually wins? The Rebbe asked. The one that plays better, I smiled. The Rebbe continued, do you ever play baseball with friends? Sure. Do you ever go to see a professional game? Sure I do. Why is it not enough to just play with your friends? Rebbe, I'm just playing kids play with my friends. But a professional game, it's for real. Yosef, the Rebbe addressed me, in your heart there is a large baseball field. The two teams are your Yetzer Hara and the Yetzer HaTov. Up to now, they played amateur. But now that you're becoming a bar mitzvah, they are playing professionally. It is for real. You have to make sure that you're always victorious over your negative tendencies. Remember, just like in baseball, the one who plays better wins. If you want, you will always be triumphant. Rabbi Yosef Klushkin has this in his book, page 186, 187. Magnificent. One more. What an individual he was. One more. By the way, in the latest Torah to Go, if you notice, I star in it in two different places. Kaliach Yad. One is my Talmud Rabbi Aaron Goldschneider thanks me for introducing him to the Rav and going through what he wrote. So that's Hakaras HaTov. I appreciate it. But if you go to Rabbi Elazar Muskin's article, He takes for granted that the Holy Ghost, and in Rabbi Aaron Rakefet's eulogy for Joe DiMaggio, takes for granted that everyone knows who Rakefet is, everyone knows who Joe DiMaggio, and he quotes, you gotta see what he does with my eulogy, turns it into the whole chesped. So, Baruch Hashem, by the way, I don't know if I've told this, and I've said this privately, but I didn't say it publicly. I was once in Teaneck, and I finished speaking, I was scholar in residence, and people were waiting in line to give me Yashar Chayach. And this man is there with his son, and he introduces the kid to me, and he says, this is the rabbi who gave the eulogy for Joe DiMaggio. The poor kid was about 8, 9 years old. He didn't know what the word eulogy meant. He didn't know who Joe DiMaggio was, which is even worse, not to know what Julie Mela, but not to know who Joe DiMaggio was. And a Talmud of ours just sent me something. I just got this from a chaver who's a shaluach. The first Purim I was on Shlichat, only one person showed up for the party. That's worse than no one showing up. You understand? I know what he's saying. If one person, you have to be stuck with him. You're embarrassed. No one else showed up. But one kid showed. I was just Masada Kedushin for her son. In other words, one lady showed up. And look what comes out of a chance encounter. I was just Masada Kedushin for her son. I've gotten more comments on the letter and the fact that I said if I would be the judge, the letter wouldn't be the main type of testimony. You have to know what Chabad is about. So a lot of people, the Rebbe, Nat Lewin says in an interview that the Rebbe told them that this letter is very important. I don't deny it. But Barry Gurayeh's lawyers made a strong case when they said, look, the letter may not be taken at face value. Perhaps the Rebbe meant he's not known, but Professor Marx, my stand is, and my understanding, and again, this influenced the judges, that if you know Chabad, it's not like any other Hasidus, and there's not the slightest doubt it belonged to the Hasidim. Also, as a side note, I once gave out a freebie, an article about three rabbis, including Rabbi Haskell Lookstein, and a judge playing tennis. Did you pick up the judge's name? Alvin Hellerstein. He was one of the defense lawyers for Barry Gurayeh. So, an interesting comment. Now, as far as the trial went and everything we did last week, once again, I want to mention that what Morty Tarrigan gave me by this kuntres by Reb Shalom Dovber Levine, who's the librarian, and he's putting out the new the Rav Shulchan Aruch. He's putting it out in a beautiful edited edition. So his piece on the trial, Mishpat HaSvarim, you have a tremendous description of the Svarim, what Svarim was sold, the $186,000 that Barry got for them, what it cost to buy back, and here's a picture of the Svarim in the Chabad library. It gives you a feeling these are all old Svarim, which tremendous value simply because of their age and because of the hands who actually touched them. But now I want to go sideways, and I want to show you the impact this machloikis had on someone we've quoted before, who's not a chassid, not religious, but a sociologist looking at Chabad, looking at chassidus. And in his second book, he devotes an entire chapter to the case, and he's dealing essentially with Barry Gurayeh and what Barry had to say, and you're going to hear some very strong language here, and I want to make some comments. I'm quoting once again from Hasidic People, A Place in the New World by Jerome Mintz. And the entire chapter, it's chapter 24, it's called Lubavitch, Days of Trial, Days of Celebration. And it's a very, very fascinating chapter. It's a chapter, of course, that's widely read, and Mintz's books are sine qua non requirements if you're going to study about Hasidut in a general university. Now, a lot of the material we've discussed already, he describes the library, and he tells us how important the library was to the Lubavitcher dynasty. On page 282, he quotes testimony from Chana Guraye, testimony giving in court, where she speaks about even my great-grandfather, that's the fourth Rebbe, the Maharash, Rebbe Shmuel, even my great-grandfather, when they were burning the towns around him, had horses ready 24 hours around the clock in case it would be necessary to flee. If we had to flee, the horses had to be there to take the library, to take the Kitvei Yad David. And this was so important to Chabad. And that parallels what I told you about Mori Rebbe with the Kitvei Yad of Reb Chaim. And what Tova told me, if you all recall, I said it last week, I said it before, it left an indelible impression upon me that Tova said, if the house burns down, by the way, a prominent house just burned down in New York, not the entire house, but one of the apartments that were very severely affected was the apartment of Ezra Merkin. It's in the New York Times, a very prominent building, and it's mind-boggling with all the fame and prestige and the guards and the building, and it has to be upkept properly. People, they say to buy into that apartment building, you're advised, don't come to talk to us if you don't have free money available, not just investments. Everyone is a millionaire in Israel. We all know that. You have an apartment, you have a car, you have a Kupat Gamble, you're a millionaire, but that money is not liquided. It's not liquid money, if I'm using the right term. And they say, you don't come to talk to us about the apartment of this building, let's have $100 million. Am I quoting the article correctly, Jay? Okay, New York Times. And that the burned down, wow. So you can imagine, what do you do? Think, if something burns down, what do you grab? I thought to myself, what would I grab? My tefillin, my talis, my tefillin, and my letters to me from the Rav and Rav Moshe. That's what I would grab, okay? Everything else is icing on the cake. Now, and he describes the life of the Rebbe, the previous Rebbe and the new Rebbe, but he then goes into great detail. He interviews Barry Guraye. And Barry Guraye talks about his background, which we've spoken about. His rabbinical degree was from Torah Vadas, but nonetheless, Barry was considered as a candidate for his grandfather's post. And in any event, since his father, too, was being seriously considered, he became emotionally enmeshed in the selection process. Now, I don't believe that Barry Guraye, again, it could very well be that Jerome Mintz simply is adding a little of his own understanding. He's listening to Barry through his own prisma. He's not a Jew who was steeped in Hasidus. But I think what Barry's saying here, and I was told this by people from within, that in 1950, when the Machloket begins, who should be the next Rebbe, the few who supported Barry Guraye, and again, I don't mean to tell you it was a close contest. It wasn't for the sake of argument like what's going on with right now with Trump and Cruz, or what's going on with Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. It wasn't close at all. But the few who supported Barry made the point that who supported his father, Reb Shmaya Guraye, the Rashad, made the point that there is a child, there is succession possible. Now, the truth of the matter is that Barry himself had a different personality by that time. And he explains it. At the time of my grandfather's death, some people were banking on me over my uncle and my father. I was 27 at the time. I was not interested. I was more of a private person, a researcher, not a public person. It didn't fit my goals. I came to the United States in 1940 when I was 17. By education, I was a physicist. I went to Brooklyn College in physics, then to Columbia. I finished my PhD thesis. Then he goes on what his work was and what he did, his articles. In 1950, my grandfather died. I supported my father. I was actually closer to my uncle than to my father. We both had a technical education and we developed a certain kind of closeness. When my uncle came here in 1941, he was still interested in working as an electrical engineer. He and I were quite friendly in those days, and he used to tell me about his reactions. So you see, this is what we've spoken about, that there's no question people shift gears in life. The Rebbe was in two worlds. He was a gon adir who knew kol haTorah kula. I mean, I've said this more than once when you read some of the books that are written about the Rebbe in France. They describe the Rebbe and the Rebbetzin like they're running away from the limelight, running away from Hasidus. It's absolutely not true. The Rebbe came to America a gon adir b'chol haTorah kula. He didn't pick it up by osmosis. He picked it up through learning and incessantly learning. But beyond that, he had tremendous broad interest in science, particularly in engineering. And Barry was very attracted to his uncle. But then the problem begins, and the Hasidim have this veto power. And as I've said a million times over, no one forces anyone to be a Hasid. You choose the Rebbe, and there was so much support. At the time of the election, and here you start to hear the bitterness, at the time of the election, they organized bands of hooligans. They came twice when my father and I were davening and took away our Sefer Torah scroll. I was trying to negotiate the situation, and I told my uncle that in the light of the way he was behaving, I could not support him. Since then, he has tried to make life miserable for me. And you see, this is inevitably whenever you get involved in machlokes, and this is something every public figure has to learn. It's part of the Israeli scene today. When a public figure says something, implies something, there'll always be an extreme element in the kahal that will take it to extremes. People, you saw this with Square, when a chassid davened in, I think it was a nursing home, and didn't daven with the Rebbe's minion in Square, in New Square. And I'm told that the Square Rebbe is a very dominant figure, that it has to be his way. This is part of the way he runs his chassidus. Now what happened? The Rebbe said something about this chassid breaking rank, and a kid went into this person's house and tried to burn down the house with people in it. He went to jail. He was just released a few months ago. He was married. They married him off after he came out of jail. But you see, this is extremism. Be very, very careful. You see here, teenage kids or young adults burned that Arab kid to death. I mean, there's no way in the world you can justify it. And when people say Arabs do it to Jews, so what? We're not Arabs. We're not animals. We're not terrorists. We have respect for human beings, Selam Elokim. And you have to be so careful. And whatever happened, definitely there were two incidents where two hard-headed young Hasidim smacked the faces of Barry and his father. And you can see the breach developing. And this is what Chazal mean, Chachamim Hizaharu B'divreichem. And I told you this, what happened to me in Maplewood when I made that comment on Ruby and Nikmat Adam. You have to be very, very careful when you're a public figure. You don't know the mental stability of the hundreds of people who are listening to you. Okay, now, then he speaks about his father. And how do you think the Rashag felt? My father did not take it very well at first. He looked at his options. He wanted to stay with the yeshiva, Tomchei Tamimim, he had built up. He swallowed his pride. He did the best he could. So you see, when analyzing his father, a real chassid who knew the real situation would tell you that it's to the Rashag's credit that he put aside all personal feeling, all personal tendencies, and Natan, he became a full-fledged chassid of the seventh Rebbe. And my dear friend Barry Lieberman, who's a born into Chabad, he's a Gevorin, Nishna Gevorin, if you know Yiddish. Barry Lieberman told me so many times he would watch Nafabrengen, how Reb Shmayahu Goraye would look at the Rebbe, b'dechilu urechimu. And I told you, Reb Shmaya was quoted that he said, I can also go to my father-in-law's keva. I can also pray at my father-in-law's keva. But my brother-in-law will understand what my father-in-law is saying to him. I do not. And he said, there were times when I would ask, I had problems in Tomchei Tamimim, I would ask my brother-in-law, the Rebbe, ask our father-in-law what I should do. And he would come back and tell me what his father-in-law said to him. So you see, no one suffered more, I would say, than Barry. Barry's mother, this is the nature of life. Sometimes women suffer more than men. I know my wife can make a comment that, let's say I speak, I do something, I don't get a thank you. She'll say, look how they don't treat you properly. You understand? You laugh at it. Again, like I said yesterday, I can't live on that level. I live on a different level. I have to look over my shoulder and see what the Rav's is saying to me. If I can look him in the eye and be proud of what I'm doing, that's all that counts for me. But women, it's part of perhaps the feminine personality. Each one can interpret it as he wishes, but I think it's part of the feminine personality. And the Rebbetzin suffered, and Barry suffered. And life went on, and at then the whole question of the Sfarim, Barry's attitude was, this is the family, I have every reason to sell, I needed the money. And then Barry, in his interview, and this is all published, in other words, this people who are not going to have access to other volumes will have this volume and this chapter. And then he speaks about what happened when the Rebbe Rav Abrengen on July 13th, 1985, spoke out against Barry and the people who took the books. One of the Rebbe's followers broke into his parents' apartment on the third floor of 770 Eastern Parkway and came close to killing his mother. Her hand, nose, and palate were fractured in the attack. The Lubavitch Hasidim maintained variously that they did not know the identity of the perpetrator and that the man was deranged and that he fled to Israel and could not be located. And yes, this was a real tragedy, and the Rebbe understood from that point on, he never spoke about the book incident, the trial, the depositions, and all that was going on, Jason. He never spoke about it again in public. And again, this is the same story when you speak in public, there are thousands of people there. Not everyone is totally balanced. I have seen it, I have learned it, I have suffered with it. I have students by the thousands upon thousands, as you know, some of them I know intimately, and I cannot say everyone is totally balanced, totally walking with 2 feet on the ground. People are psychologically different. People, they're psychological reactions. You have to be very careful what you say. And of course, I need not tell you, this pushed Barry all the more away from the Rebbe, away from Chabad. And here I want to quote Barry, and this is quoted in the book. He says, "Ugh, my uncle, what has happened with my uncle? That the movement has acquired many characteristics of a cult in which people have stopped thinking for themselves. Chabad started out as a spiritual and philosophical movement. Nowadays, Chabad stands for, listen to this, Chabad, charisma, blessings, and dollars, especially dollars. It's a different kind of thing. I'm not interested in money. It's means to an end. All right, you can dismiss this, that this is a very bitter person speaking. It's a nephew speaking. I want to say something a little bit more profound, a little deeper, and hope it's life advice. My dear students, in life, you can always be positive, but you can always see negative. The bigger a movement is, you're bound to have more negative aspects to it. I don't have to go further than Yeshiva University. Yeshiva University, tremendous success story on the American scene. I can quote to you many graduates of Yeshiva will take, for example, Reb Aaron Lichtenstein, Reb Heschel Schachter. Yesterday's shiur was totally devoted to Reb Heschel, essentially. Fabulous stories, fabulous achievements. Nevertheless, Yeshiva University plays a role in David Hartman's outlook, development. You cannot believe what I just saw. Tova Hartman, David's daughter, Professor Tova Hartman, just mourned and forwards had a big article quoting her from a talk she gave, an article she wrote, that it was a great disgrace. Nu, are you living in this world? Tell me. A great disgrace that we knocked down the homes around the Kotel HaMaravi and built the plaza there for Jews to daven in. We took away the homes of Arabs, and one of the Arabs who lived there is a professor who teaches with her and still longs for the home he grew up in, which was summarily destroyed in 1967. I want to tell Tova Hartman that she would not be in Israel, she would not be Professor Hartman, she would not be the founder of one of the founders of Shira Chadasha Lo Aleinu, if not for the fact that the homes were destroyed. No, am I right or wrong? Her father was a rabbi in Montreal, like every other rabbi in the world, including a guy named Rolf Kaufman, Maplewood, South Orange, who thought they were doing the greatest things imaginable by building Orthodox synagogues. I wasn't on the level of Hartman. Hartman already was famous, charismatic, Montreal. And then came the Six-Day War. Mashiach was here. We couldn't stay in America, right or wrong? I told the story. Morty, I think you were there when it happened. Yeah. You were there. He declared that year, I'm glad Professor Tarragon is here to certify that Rakefet is not telling you fibs and stories, that every word he says is honest. And Hartman went crazy that year. Don't have to observe Tisha B'Av. The Kotel HaMaravi. We have way to daven. And she's the Kalavai. They would have knocked down the whole old city. A lot more Jews would be alive today. Because the old city is one of the most difficult places to guarantee safety. Like my wife says, they have cameras all over, so you wave while you're being slaughtered there. You understand? They've caught the murderers, but the Jews were already murdered. They caught through the cameras recently, absolutely. But the Jews were already murdered, no? And what was he doing? That doesn't belong to them. This was given to us. Do you believe in the Bible? What's going on here? So you see, you can be critical of every movement. Take Lakewood. I learned in Lakewood when Lakewood was still, you walked into Lakewood. It was a great experience in my life that colors all my thinking, my teachings, my research. I do. I'm very proud of the fact that I had the privilege to be a Talmud for a short while. He's not my Rebbe Mufak, but to be a Talmud and speak. And I, as a kid, I once argued with Reb Aaron Hashkafa, Reb Aaron Cutler in Lakewood. In my time, when you walked into the Beit Medrash, they gave you an oxygen mask. You breathe Lithuanian air. It was not America. It was extraterritorial. the different Lakewood, the Alta Slutska, the Alta Kletska, who would ever dream that what would become with Lakewood? It's the biggest yeshiva in America today. I don't think it's as big as Mir, but it's thousands upon thousands. All right? You can get up and say, Lakewood? Let's go to the list. I have a lawyer who's a very famous lawyer, a Talmud. So this Talmud has access to lists of who's in penitentiaries, not just state prisons, which is more readily available, but federal penitentiaries. And there's one Lakewood graduate who I will never forgive because he got up at a convention about Agudat Yisrael right after Rabin was assassinated. I wrote a very strong letter to Rabbi Moshe Sher. I got a letter of double talk back, but Moshe meant well, but I understand he still represents Agudat Yisrael. Got up at the convention and ripped the hell out of Bnei Akiva for raising a murderer like Yigal Amir. May I correct him? Yigal Amir's entire elementary education was in Chinuch Atzma'i. I don't believe he was ever a member of Bnei Akiva. Later he did Hester at Karim Biavna, I believe it was, and he got more involved with the religious Zionist crowd. But his roots are Chinuch Atzma'i, 100%. He got up at the convention. A few weeks later, this Menuvel was arrested, sat in jail for many years. One of the Ponzi real estate schemes. Wow, what that man pulled off. All right, I don't want to mention his name. He came from a chashuv, a religious family. But you can do a list of Lakewood graduates. A guy just went to jail for 25 years. No. You're going to maledict Lakewood? You're going to curse Lakewood? You're going to say, this is Lakewood? It is totally unfair. When you have a massive movement, you are bound to have a certain percentage of failure. That is life. Humans are humans. Mori Rebbe used to say, V'chol banayach limudei Hashem, thus is na in your mais HaMashiach. Biz Yemais HaMashiach Halavai Rov Banayich Limudei Hashem. Do I have to explain it or you understand me? That Kol Banayich only when Mashiach is here. Until Mashiach comes, Halavai the majority should be Limudei Hashem. So I want to come back to Barry's witticism, I'll call it. All right, I can understand he's bitter. I can understand life went against him. I can understand his father lost out. His mother, later, his mother is beaten up. I can understand him 1,000%. But when you start talking about Chabad as a cult, first of all, it's not Chabad, it's Hasidus in general. This is why I'm a Litvak. I cannot arrange my life around a Rebbe. I have to have the ability to think to the side of my own. I learned in Volozhin. I learned in Telz. I learned in Slabotka. I learned in Brisk. All right. It was very different than if you'll take Gare, if you'll take Belz, if you'll take the Ruzhina dynasties. It's a different world altogether. There's freedom of choice. But of all the Hasidic movements, the one that's the least of a cult on an intellectual level is Chabad. Alex, do you agree with me? What do you say? You're a student of philosophy. Do you reach what I'm saying?
Yes, although I think you're overstating that Litvaks think for themselves.
Oh, but say that, Alex, you're a product of the 21st century. I'm a product of the 19th century. Okay, so don't argue with me. If you read the memoir literature out of the 1800s, you'll understand Rakefet very, very well. Litvakin prided themselves. You know what a shir was like in Volozhin? I was flabbergasted when I learned in Lakewood, the Slutz. I learned in Lakewood, Kletz. They would shoot in the middle of the shir, the giants, the Ari, the Arayot Shel B'chabura. The giants would shoot at Rabbaran right in the middle of Shia. I told you how Rabbaran picked his son-in-law. You know the story? You don't know the story, Rabbaran Cutler. Rabbaran Cutler finally visited Israel. Yitzchak knows the story, and he was giving a Shia right in Hebron. And one individual is sitting with his shoes on the table. And Rabbaran shoots at him, Azei Zitzmin, when the Kletzker Hashishiva Zakta Shir, this is the way you say it, that's what he's saying, is Shir. And he shot back at the Kletzker, hey, the Kletzker Hashishiva, the Kemp Lerin, and the Kop get him covered, but the Kletzker Hashishiva fulfilled the Rambam, and he shoots the Rambam at him, the Kletzker is gone. That's the same story which Shlomo Goranchik and the Rav. You don't know the story in 35. The Rav gives a shear of Shlomo Goranchik in Hebron, the same story. Anyway, Rabbaran took...
I don't know if that's like a positive story. It sounds a lot like Gaiva rather than reality.
Alex, I didn't say it's positive or negative. I said it's a reality. Rabbaran Cutler took him as a son-in-law, which was a terrible mistake. It was apples and oranges. And you know what I'm talking about. He married the Rabbaran's daughter. The marriage did not last, unfortunately. It was apples and oranges. But with the Rav and Rav Shlomo Goranchik, the Rav gives a shear, and Goranchik shoots at him a Rambam, and the Rav said, "Mindachti betrachten ich v'tach geben an enfa," and you should know Rabbi Goran never let the Rav forget. Every time someone was going to America, Goran got hold of him. If it send the Boston Rav, and for time in Boston, Zogim as Goranchik vat fanenfa. Goranchik is waiting for an answer. I'm letting secrets out here. But you see, that's the Litvisher world. But Chabad, of all the Hasidiyot, there was no Hasidut that put so much stress on learning and thinking and philosophy and Tanya and Likutei Torah, excuse me? And Likutei Torah, we're talking, and the Likutei Torah and the Rav Shulchan Aruch, to be a Chabadnik on a level, you had to be a London Mufak. This is not just Bells, where you daven, where the whole, the great vision of Bells is to build beautiful shuls, right? If you went on a tour of the Beis HaMikdash in North Tel Aviv, you'll understand what I'm saying. So, you see, these words are bitter. And there may be truth. Yes, there were many Hasidim who knew nothing, and their whole life was the charisma of the Rebbe. I've said this more than once, I'll say it again. It's why you have the Messianic movement. The Rebbe made tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of Balei Tshuva. Something no one else could do. I mean, you got to understand who the Rebbe was. And I'm an outsider looking in, but I can't deny facts. People would tell me stories. They looked at the Rebbe. They looked at his eyes. He penetrated them. I don't know. Rakefet's a nice guy. And I know many Jews who saw me and look at me and live near me. And no one becomes frum because of my eyes penetrating them. Wow. You see? Charisma, absolutely. Now, dollars is also a very unfair comment. Wherever you're going to have money, not everyone is like, all right, I'll talk about myself, like Aaron Rakefet. People contact me, they want to buy my books. No, any normal person who publishes books should sell his books. I can't do that. I can't take money from people. If I was selling my books, I'd give them away free. Okay? I have no idea. When we were dealing with the Rav, which became a bestseller, it's Baruch Hashem, it's in it. It's many printings already. All right, the publishers make a fortune. They do it terribly. If you know what the book looks like today, there's no resemblance to the beauty of the original edition. Cheap paper, cheap binding, but people want it. It's the only thing you have on the Rav's life. So I told Bernie Sharpstein, who's one of the nicest guys I ever dealt with in the publishing field. He should live and be well. He's an older man today. So I told Bernie Sharpstein, I'd like you to leave out the part on the copyright page where it says no one is allowed to copy it, no one is allowed, you need permission. The opposite. Anyone may copy anything from this book and use it. And he told me he can't do that because the Book Publishers Association would kick him out. You understand? No, if you're going to have people, their money. Whenever you're dealing with money, you're going to have a certain percentage of people who are dishonest. Ketav, Bernie Snotting was. Ketav doesn't exist anymore. They sold out. They sold out here to Urim, and I still am not going to give a hechsher to Urim until I see I haven't gotten a check of royalties in over 2 years already. From the moment they sold, and the book continues to sell, I know people bringing me copies to sign, and nothing. It's unbelievable. But thank God, Ketav nicht to say unkommen zu leben. Thank God, I made it. I survived. You know, I'm modella kaddish barku. Financially, my life was not easy, and I pay a price for it. Because as I told you, I don't have one grandchild who wants to be a melamed. And some of my grandchildren are fine lamdonim and good human beings, wonderful human beings. They would be fabulous rabbeim. A few of them were offered beautiful jobs. No, Saba, we don't want to be like you. We want to make a living, quote, end quote. All right. We want to make a living. What can I say? I hope with my great-grandchildren, one of them will come back and be... But all right, I have a nephew. So last week, I have a nephew. I have another nephew who's also in Habatzat Torah. It's my brother's son-in-law is the head of a series of kollelim in Tel Aviv that deal with post-army people who want to learn on a higher level. Like kids who went to high school, learned a little Gemara, then did army, and now they want to learn on a higher level. So he also is involved in Habatzat Torah. But I have to tell you, this is an unfair comment. Can I say to you that there's not one Lubavitcher in the world who is dishonest? Absolutely not. No, Alex, tell me why I can't say it as a fact. No, who knows? Who lives here? Who's living in Israel? One of the big Lubavitchers from Kfar Chabad just went to jail. Don't want to mention his name. A big focal figure. Money problems. Money problems. Went to jail. This is from a key family. Oh no, this is the nature of the human being. Ribbono shel Olam, but we've had the Katsav wears a kippah. Katsav is Shomer Shabbos 100%. Katsav's children did Hezda. Katsav's children went to Chorev. Katsav told the reforming conservative off, which no member of the chief rabbinate would do. Haaretz would go crazy. Told them off. Now where's Katsav today? What are we going to do? Bring down Judaism? What can we do? Ein tzadkos lechtavi asakula tov. The question is, at least the tov should be a lot greater than the sins. But occasionally the sins are major. You see what's going on in the army today with Bucharest. Thank God in all the headlines, except once again, Bucharest, they tell me he's a tzaddik, he's fabulous, he's a bit of a London and dedicated. And here you have women, and I don't want to quote the news today. God have mercy if it's true. Look what happened in our world with a certain rabbi was the most popular rabbi in Israel. Two of my grandsons were talmidim mufakarim his. What they suffered, what one grandson suffers until today. The other one rebounded. I thought just the opposite, that the other one would not rebound, and the other one, I felt would handle it better, and it turned out just the opposite. But what we've gone through, what are you talking about? So I got to be an idiot to say every Rav in the Mamlachti Dati world is a phony, a fake. Absolutely not. The majority of Tzaddikim are wonderful. But there are a few who failed us. I don't say Barry is wrong, but to say that this is Chabad, charisma, blessings, dollars... This is absolutely not true. Just the opposite. Anyone who came to see the Rebbe, you never paid money. There was no such concept as a pigeon nefesh. You wanted to contribute? That's a different story. The Rebbe had people, multi-millionaires, who became tremendous Jews and gave the Rebbe millions upon millions and millions of dollars. But that has nothing to do with money. It has nothing to do with the Rebbe. Nothing to do with his pockets. Nothing to do with the car that they drove him around in. He never took vacations. He never flew first class on a plane. What are you talking about? I don't think the Rebbe ever flew on a plane. I think he came to America by boat, not a plane. Absolutely. talking about? You see? But this is life. And you have to be a smart person to understand this. I've had people say to me, "Ah, I hate Lakewood with a passion. Look who they produce." Idiot! Look at the other 95% who they produce. "I hate YU with a passion. Look what came out of YU." You're right. But look at the other 90% of YU. And Barry, and it's interviewed, and it's here, and there's no disclaimer. It can be correct. It is correct. But this is the absolute minority. It's a miyut she'eino nikar. Now, this article goes on, and Barry is furious against the judge. He says, "Judge Sifton is the former son-in-law of Reinhold Niebuhr. He is since divorced. He was of the tradition that the church owned the property and not the priest. Because of the numbers they sent every day to the courthouse," he's from Chassidim, who came to the trial, "he saw this as a case of the Jewish population against Barry Gurayi. Only later, Jacob Cohn, a Satma, entered the case on my side." You follow? They came up with some Satma Chassid who testified that the property of the Chassidut belongs to the Rebbe. Yes, the property of the Chassidut and Satma belongs to the Rebbe. Chas v'chalila, you should compare Satma to Chabad. Take a look what one Rebbe accomplished and what the other Rebbe accomplished. There is, I don't even want to speak further because I'm not subjective when it comes to Satma. Although I myself went to the Satma Shtibul when I heard the previous Rebbe, and I share the anguish that the survivors went through, but I cannot go further. That is not Hakarat HaTov. Who is he saved by? By the Jewish agency. And again, if you've studied psychology, you're going to learn something in psychology. I've said this 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. It's the most important psychological insight I ever got in my life. When life is based upon favors, there's a word in Hebrew, gomlim. The Rav once spoke about this, Robinson Crusoe. Remember the talk in the early 70s? The Rav gave a talk on gomlim, on life. Is Robinson Crusoe a type that we should advocate? Is there something to be proud of? Or is Robinson Crusoe a negative concept for us Torah Jews? And Rav raised the whole issue of individualism and community. And without going into great detail, obviously he reached the conclusion that we in Torah believe in both. We are individuals, but we're part of a kehila. To be only an individual is not sufficient for a Jew. You have to be Adat Yisrael, B'nai Yisrael, Kahal Yisrael, in addition to your individuality. The Rav raised this issue, very fascinating talk. When it comes to Satma, someone does you a favor. Life is based upon favors. What do I mean life is based upon favors? I got up this morning, I davened, I went to a minyan. 9 other people did me a favor. They came to make the minyan. I do them a favor. I come to make a minyan. We have a small minyan. It's early. We have 14, 15 people. If anyone is not going to come, you announce it in advance, so they try to fill in. You have responsibility. I came to Gris. I ate some cookies that I bought. Rami Levy. Rami Levy does me a favor. He runs a big store. I do Rami Levy a favor. I buy in his store. You start to see what I'm saying? Life is based upon gomlim. We each help each other. All right. This is normal favors. For Yomo did me a favor. He brought me a gift, a bottle of Pepsi Cola. No big deal. So I'll give him a bottle of Pepsi Cola down the line. These are normal favors. What about if someone does you a favor? He saves your life. It's a favor you cannot repay. So psychological studies show either you do everything in your power to thank this person, or you hate the person because he put you in a position that you cannot repay him. It's very interesting. Now I'll give you a life example. Three girls graduated Stern College in the early years. We're talking the 1950s, late 50s. Three girls, all three married, all three came in Aliyah. Two married, all three came in Aliyah. The two who married were very nice looking. The third girl was by far not as nice looking. All right. We all are born with certain looks, and we have to accept reality. So limit what plastic surgeons can do for us. Fine. One of the girl lived in Tel Aviv, married children. One girl lived in Yerushalayim, married children. The third girl lived in Yerushalayim, unmarried. The girl who lived in Tel Aviv, lo aleinu, cancer, died, left three orphans. The friend of hers, the classmate who was married in Yerushalayim, made a shidduch between the girl who had never married, the alman. They married. That woman who had never married before took on the children. There might have been four children, not just three. Four.
Her brother.
Raised them.
Her brother.
She married the widower. They were classmates. They were classmates. She married the widower and raised those children, and the marriage, beautiful. She never spoke to the classmate who made the shidduch again. She could never look her in the eye. And I did my research. How do you explain this? Of course, that woman did her a favor that you can't repay. So instead of loving her, she resented her. It's psychological. It's not something you have control over. You have to be a very big person to overcome the psychological difficulties. You have to have learned, Rabbi Rubin will explain it to you. You have to be a Talmud of Rabbi Yaakov Moshe HaKohen lesson. Okay? You have to be on that level to understand it, take it apart, and live beyond it. The Sakhmuruv, instead of thanking the Jewish agency, became their biggest enemy. They saved his life. And when people would say to him, Rebbe, the Jewish agency, Hatarich Geratavit, he would answer, no, sie nicht mir gedacht wird. Der Eibishter hat mir gedacht. Yeah, the Eibishter saved you. The Ribbono Shel Olam saved you. But they were the mechanism that saved you. And take a look. This is life. So Barry is boasting, David, what's your problem? We're building a little house here. Nicht a Heuchhäuser, but a Kleinhäuser. What's up?
What's the difference between Satmar and not being able to look at somebody in the face?
I don't know what the difference is, but psychologically, applies to Rudolf.
So, didn't the Samarebi have his anti-Zionist views before?
Of course, but they got a. Of course, but Hakaret Tatov and all that happened, and take a look, compare what the Rebbe grew up with anti-Zionist views. What are you talking? The sixth Rebbe, the fifth Rebbe, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. But please study the Rav's Chamesh Drashot. Go back and listen to Rakefet's lectures in the Monday class years ago. Tens and tens, if not hundreds of hours on Zionism. You'll get your answer. But I stand in my case. Poor Barry Gurayeh. That the only one who came to his defense, he says, was the Satmar. All right, take a look after World War II, what the Lubavitcher Rebbe accomplished, and the Satmar. Okay, let's go further. Now I want to come to the high point of today's shiur. I want to end this off because after Pesach, it's after we had the Suda, the Mashiachta, we have to only talk about Mashiach the rest of the year. Okay. Now, you know what's amazing? The spontaneous celebration that broke out in 770. And now I want to go into a little bit detail and give you the source. But first of it, you can understand there was a tremendous amount of tension. What would happen? What would this Gentile judge say? I want to show you how smart the bottle is. I began drinking this Chodesh Elul, and evidently the bottle understood you got to be finished by Pesach, although there's no chametz in it, but you know, your mouth, etc. Take a look. Baruch Hashem, a very intelligent bottle wandered into my closet. Oh, my dear students, I wish all those listening across the world could see the wonderful faces in front of me and their eyes that dance when they absorb knowledge. This is the greatest thrill for a Rebbe. This is what it's all about. Dor l'dor, that's what it's all about. My dear students, a lot was at stake. The Gwiraye family questioned the very authenticity of the seventh Rebbe. It was much more than the books. You're dealing with a secular court. You're not dealing with Lamdonim. You're dealing with a nice Protestant who had respect for religion, no question about it. What will he decide? And when the word came out and hit 770, the students went berserk. And he has a whole description here, beginning on page 292. I'll summarize it for you. They poured out into the street, started dancing. A tape recorder with loudspeakers, with a recordings of a Chabad choir singing the Dan Nitzach. Notzach, they pronounce it. I'll show you the source. We are victorious. No? Do you know Eastern Parkway? Can anyone describe Eastern Parkway? There's a local lane where cars are parked. Then there are three lanes, then the center, then three lanes, then the local lane with cars parked, I think on either side or one side. It's at least a 10 or 12 lane highway. The students rolled cans, garbage cans, out into the street and blocked the whole side of the local lane in front of 770. And if hundreds are dancing, thousands soon appear. The police, of course, are called out. To begin with, there was always a police car parked in front of 770 by this time. The police removed the barrels and put up police barriers, not allowing cars in. And then what I mentioned to you, what was it, last week or 2 weeks ago, suddenly station wagons start pulling up with mashke, with hard liquor. Remember I told you how they got the liquor from every simcha while the trial was going on. Whatever was left over was sequestered, sold with the chametz, and held in case there will be a big celebration. Well, the word went all over the world. By the next day, 40 Hasidim flew in from Paris. Ugh, this already inspired everyone. Hasidim coming in from Paris just to dance, just to celebrate, and the simcha reached tremendous proportions. The word went out that very first day that the Rebbe would not daven upstairs in his small minyan, but he would come downstairs into the Beit HaMedrash for Mincha. That immediately meant that the Rebbe was going to give a sicha. And Chabad was electrified. Now, What's the source? What do you mean? Didan nitzach, nutzach, one notzeach. What are we talking about? So it's very interesting. There are two sources in Medrash Rabbah that are referred to. Each, various volumes, some cite one source, some cite the other source. It could very well be that, like any other source in Medrash, you're going to find that these words, at least the Dan Nitzach, is the way we would say it in Matan Hebrew, is probably repeated many times over. I found this with a Medrash that the Rav gave an unbelievable drasha in the mid-50s. I write about this in my work on the Rav. It was, I give you the exact date there, but maybe it was 55, 56. The Rav gave a drasha in the Haggadah part. He spoke very dramatically about what do Chazal mean when they say, Borei Olamat Umachrivan, that God built many worlds until he was satisfied and gave us this world. This Medrash is very important because it sustains the whole concept of dinosaurs. If you're familiar with the Tiferet Yisrael, in his commentary following, it's generally printed after Masechet Sanhedrin. It can find the commentary at times after the Bavad. It's not always printed in the same place. But the Tiferet Yisrael, when they found dinosaurs and dinosaurs' bones, we're going back to the 1830s, 1840s, Rabbi Yisrael Lifshitz wrote, Ashreinu Shezachinu, and this proves the Medrashim and Borei Olamatu Machrivan, that this shows that there were many worlds before this world, and these dinosaurs are from a previous world. A very famous Medrash. The Rav used this Medrash very effectively. When the Rav said, what do Chazal mean by this Medrash? It's not just to be taken literally, but it has a beautiful, beautiful figurative meaning. And the Rav said, people look at me. Every Friday I go to visit Maimonides in Boston, and I quiz the students. And this past Friday I was there, and there was a guy named Irvin Rubin. And I got all excited when he answered my questions properly. And a week later I went, and there was a kid there, Jay Solomon. And I got all excited when he answered my questions on Chumash and Rashi properly. And people say to me, I'm quoting the Rav now word by word, I'm living it in Yiddish but saying it in English. Do you remember this, Yitzchak?
It was with Edie Branson. Owned the bookstore on Harvard Street.
Yeah, what about
her? She read a Tosfos better than the boys.
She read, and people say to me, Rabbi Soloveitchik, was freipinzich? What are you so happy? You are happy. You yet saw Reb Chaim. You, and I'm quoting the Rav now, you yet spent entire nights talking and learning with Reb Baruch Ben Leibovich.
He
didn't say that. The Rav said, you yet spoken learning with the Divine Avraham, with Avraham Dovber, Kahana Shapiro, people who knew Shas and Paiskim and every Taisvas, and in Freitzach, an American kid knows, all right, Edie Branson knew a little Taisvas, and Jay Solomon, a big Taisvas, excuse me, and Jay Solomon knew a Chumash in Freitzach. And the Rav said so beautifully, I can never forget it. This is what we're being told. Borei Olamot Umachrivan. That, yes, the Ribbono Shel Olam built many worlds. Maybe the worlds were more beautiful. Maybe the worlds were more perfect. Maybe the species were larger and stronger. But all that was destroyed. And we have to have the ability to go further, to continue to build. And thank God, this is what we have today. We have rebuilt. Maybe we're not as great. Maybe we're not as strong. But we have rebuilt. Borei Olamot Umachrivan. What was in Brisk, what was in Kovna, what was in Vilna, what was in Kamenetz is gone. It's destroyed. It's no longer here. But we have a new world, and it's thriving, and it's alive, and it's creating. Borei olamot u'machrifan. That was the Rav. I never forgot that. Wow. Powerful. Ties in with the shiur of yesterday. What I said to you, 1984-85, it's the new generation. Whether it equals the Rav or doesn't equal the Rav, to me it doesn't equal the Rav. But that's not important. It's the new generation. They took over. They took it further. It's what I said yesterday. And that Medrash, which I caught it from the... I checked it out where the Rav got it from, Medrash Rava. So my son-in-law, who knows Medrashim backwards and forwards, he checked it out. He came up with 26 versions of the Medrash. So what I'm about to show you, I don't say it's the only places, but Yomo can check it out and play with the computer and print it out. But the idea is fabulous.
This is what the Rebbe said in Nesicha.
Meaning?
This one in...
I have two that the Rebbe is quoted as saying. Number one is Medrash Rabba, Pasha Damar, that's by Yikra. It's Pasha Lamed Siman Bet. In the edition that we have, again, there's so many editions of Medrash Rabba, so it's very, very difficult when you quote it. Which edition are you quoting? We're quoting the edition with the Hebrew translation from the Aramaic, page Resh Ayin Zayin. Resh Ayin Zayin. Wait, let me put these pages back. You shouldn't lose anything. Okay. And the Medrash tells us a story about the four minim of the lulav. And the simcha on Sukkot, you all know from your own learning, from my own, if you've heard my drashas over the years, Sukkot is the heart of simcha. I can't go into it now, but that's where we learn out simcha. Samach b'chagecha v'yitach sameach. The ultimate simcha is on Sukkot. You want, I'll give you a little insight, take 1 second. It's very simple. I've heard this from the Rav too, but I developed it with many, many sources. Pesach is physical freedom. Shavuot is spiritual freedom. Sukkot is combining the two. The Ananei Kavod represents spiritual guidance from God. The Lulav and Nektar represent physical, material, temporal achievement. And the greatest challenge to a Jew is how to achieve and synthesize, harmonize both the physical and the spiritual. To harmonize Pesach with Shavuot. And that we can only do on Sukkot. And this is why Sukkot is so important. And that's why on Sukkot you're supposed to walk around with a lulav all day. And you know, there's a Yerushalmi, that Yakira Yerushalayim, the Rambam, you'll also see Lahalacha, that they didn't just take it into shul and take it home. They walked around with the lulav as a sign of happiness and simcha all day on Sukkot. And the Medrash asks, why is that so important? And Omar Rabbi Abin, Moshe l'shnayim shenichnesu etzal hadayan. V'leit anachnu yodin man hu notzeach. Two people had a din Torah, went into the judge. You see, there's an allusion here to what went on with the Svarim. No one knows who is winning. They come out of the judgment. I'll say it in English, but here it's in Aramaic. The person who comes out waving the lulav, anan yadin, dohu natzachaya. We know if he's waving the lulav, he has won. Kach Yisrael v'umat olam ba'inu mekatrin lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'Rosh Hashanah. They come and argue and plead before God, before Rosh Hashanah. We don't know who is going to win, But when the Jews come out before God with their lulav and etrog before Am ve'edah, anu yodim, the Yisrael, inun notzachaya. We know that Yisrael came from a nachatzim. So this is one medrash. It doesn't use the word didan nitzach or didan nitzach, but it uses it in Hebrew Aramaic, exactly that thought. There was a mishpat, there was a judgment, and the Jews have won. 770 has won. Anan nitzach. We are victorious. So that's one midrash that they give as the source. It has the allusion to the trial, so it's very powerful. But there's another midrash, and this too is in Midrash Rabba Tuva Yikra, it's on Pashas Kedoshim, Pasha Chavdalid, Siman Gimel. On the Hebrew translated version, it is Amud, beginning on Amud Kuf Tet Vav. And here's a very fascinating story where also, here there's an allusion already, a lot, I would say, a lot more tangible to the Guraye family, to all that happened in this Mishpat. And the Medrash tells us the following story. The story is told, what does Kotani mean? An ish kafri, someone who lived in a dorf, in a small village. There's another explanation. Someone who was an ish chassid. His name was Abba Yossi, and he was sitting, I'm saying it in English, translating to English, he was sitting and learning at a mayan. What's a mayan? A brook, would you call it? Maybe a little bit more than a brook, a stream, a little bit of a lake. He was sitting and learning. Suddenly, while he's sitting and learning, a spirit that lives there by the water appeared to him. And the spirit says to him, do you know how many years I have lived here? I have protected you. I have taken care of you. When your children and your wives and your family came here, and I saw to it that you were never harmed. Now, this can be a very simple allusion to the Schneerson family, to the Rebbeim, to the continuity, to the traditions of the seven Rebbeim. And now, Kadam Tevayadun, you should know that right now, Ruach Bish, there is a bad spirit that wants to harm you. Wow. Amalei, Manevad. This poor Jew, this chassid, sitting at the water, said, what should we do? How can we help you? How can we protect you? They say to the spirit. And the spirit tells them, go and tell the people of the village. Mandi itle makush, mandi itle pas, mandi itle magrofin. All the people that have tools, shovels, axes, all types of harming tools. And they should come to the water. And they should look at the water. And when they see the water starts to rise, they should make a tremendous noise, bang with all their tools, and they should shout, Didan Natsach, we are winning, we are winning. And they shouldn't leave here till they see blood on the water. And they explain, what does it mean till they see blood? When you see the blood, you know that the evil spirit has been defeated. He has turned into blood. He went and told the people in the village. They went and took all their implements, all their farming implements. They looked at the water And the minute they saw the water try to rise and harm them, they made noise, they banged on the ground, the Amru, Didan Nitzach, Didan Natzach, we have won, we have won. And they didn't leave the water until they saw blood on the water. The minute they saw blood on the water, at that moment they knew they were victorious. They had succeeded. And the Medrash ends off, Mam haruchat shalom nivru l'shum siyua, tzrichim siyua, anu shenivru l'siyua, al achat kama v'kama havei yishlach ezrecha mikodesh. And the Medrash ends off, look, winds, ruach, they're not human beings. They don't get sick. They don't have to go to doctors. And yet they need help. Alachat kama v'kama, we who are living human beings, who are Jews, who are Hasidim, alachat kama v'kama, we need help. And it ends off quoting the pasuk Yishlach Ezrecha mikodesh umitzion yisadcha, that God should send to Israel Ezer v'sad, and from Tzion should come our redemption. A very powerful midrash. And there you have the words very, very clearly. Didan Nitzach, Didan Nitzach. The Simcha didn't end here, and I end off very briefly. Ultimately, the case was appealed. The appeals court threw it out again. They ruled even more strongly that the Svarim absolutely belong to 770, to the Chabad organization. Brinks, guarded trucks came in procession, bringing back all the books that Barry still had. Many of the books had to be bought back. It became a tremendous symbol for Chabad. Didan Nitzach, Didan Nitzach, has become a byword that all the Jews use today. I've heard people walk out of a difficult exam, they finally got smicha, and they will say to you, Didan Nitzach, we finally did it. The ultimate decision had very far implications. The one we've spoken about all along is, of course, the most obvious implication. The sixth Rebbe had two sons-in-law. The Hasidim willed that the seventh Rebbe should be the younger son-in-law. And by 1985, he certainly didn't need approval. But nevertheless, evil winds attacked him, and now he was declared once and for all for eternity. He was the seventh Rebbe, deserving, accomplishing, the man who changed the world. There was a second result, a simple, more earthly result. And if you read the memoir literature, you'll understand what I'm saying. Until 1984-1985, all that interested the seventh Rebbe was sending a shiruach to every corner of the world and seeing that every Jew would have a chance to do mitzvot. Nothing else interested him. Chabad expanded, but legally it was not really an organization with the proper legal safeguards. With this trial, the Rebbe gave the word that his close allies, Rabbi Krinsky, Rabbi Klein, called them his close gabayim. I don't think Rabbi Grona, I think Rabbi Grona's relationship with the Rebbe was more in a very intimate, personal relationship, davening together, etc., looking for svarim for the Rebbe. He was the Rebbe's cousin, as you know. But with the others, it was more personal and a business relationship. And they had the top lawyers in the greater Chabad world come in and guarantee that they would never ever face a question like this again. Everything was given over to Chabad. Everything was legally arranged. So my dear students, at this moment, the farewell before the big Chag HaGula, and I have some very interesting freebies to give out, something very fascinating. I have to say, the trial, I think we did an honest job. I think with all that you'll read about the trial, you'll conclude that Rakefet was very balanced and very objective. Today, I wanted to show you more how Barry felt, and, you know, the Rashag's family, and once again, to appreciate the Rashag. Very difficult. As you saw last week, his wife left him, went in and moved in with her son, and even in death, refused to be buried in the Lubavitch Cemetery, and all that went with it. It's sad. It's very sad. But that's life. And if someone's going to come and tell me Chabad, charisma, dollars, a cult, you're right. For some people, it is on that level. But that's a very small minority. Humans are humans. I think you'll all accept my analogy to Lakewood. It's a very powerful analogy. I don't like it when people say Lakewood has raised a lot of gangsters. First, tell me how many Talmidei Chachamim they raised with Mesirat HaNefesh and how Lakewood changed the entire scene in America to the point of view today that they're so self-confident that they're involved in what they very criticized Lubavitch for when I learned in Lakewood. They're involved in their outreach. Come on. That gangsters also grew up there. That's part of the human destiny. Don't tell me why you is cool old producing a Tova Hartman's. I mean, it's beyond words. I couldn't believe my eyes. It's in the forewords. Read it. See? It's unbelievable. But the Dan Nitzach, the celebration and the police and the closing of the streets and the dancing, on one level you say, no, so they got back the books. What are we talking about? 186,000, 400,000 to buy back? And all right, there were counter lawsuits afterwards. The Rebbe's sister-in-law Rinshit, it was all settled, sealed. You read, no one knows how much money Barry was given, but evidently that was it, that ended it. But why the tremendous celebration? Because, you see, the Rebbe was the Rebbe. This now, you can't argue. The Chassidim had power. They chose the Rebbe. It wasn't the Almana of the sixth Rebbe who remained the focal figure, as Rebbetzin Chanagur Aryeh said. And of course, it ends off with my words of introduction. It hurts humans, Gedolei Yisrael, when you see a machloket like this, b'fnei Yam v'yeda, it hurts. On the other hand, Matt Lewin remains a world-class personality for many reasons, but not the least of them is how he helped the Rebbe. And just a week ago, 2 weeks ago, when they celebrated, the 30 years since this decision, Matt is the featured speaker. Everyone is in a black Chabad hat, and Matt is there with a kippah shruga, very colorful. You can't mistake it. He's an interesting individualist. We came from the same background. Matt and I understand each other very, very well. Gentlemen, and I wouldn't come to class after Pesach unless you're prepared to deal subjectively with the Messianic issue. Okay? I begin with material from Moriah Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, okay? And how Rakefet used it, and how Rav Shneur Cutlass smacked my face. I take you back in time, and I bring Rav Shneur Cutler into the classroom. And let me tell you, Yitzchak, to get your face smacked by Rav Shneur in public is a schut, is a privilege, okay? Please understand me. Gentlemen, I want to tell you, Aaron Rakefet is proven right. And I'm very proud, because so much has been written and played it. Oh my gosh. A document came up. This is welcoming Reb Shimon Shtub back to Europe when he leaves Yeshivas Reb Yitzchok Chanan in 1929 to return to Europe. And you see from the document Oh, unser größer Gorn hat that America nicht gewollt herauslassen zu uns. America didn't want to let him return. And we fought a big battle, and everyone is called upon to go out to greet Hagon Reb Shimon Shkup in Grodno when he comes back. You have to read Yiddish hears about his son who's buried in America. This is the top copy. These are copies of the placard. Gentlemen, it's exactly what I told you. Everyone questioned. In Lakewood, Reb Shimon, they say, was unhappy. Unhappy in YU. In the book on Mr. Mendelovich, unhappy, unhappy. Baloney. Reb Shimon was the happiest person alive in YU. But as Reb Shmuel Belkin told me, his Rebbe showed him the letter from the Chafetz Chaim, Reb Chaim Isaac Wyszynski, hurry back, you can't remain. And he had to go back. And Dr. Belkin went with him to Penn Station, the train taking him from the boat where he sailed. Maybe, I don't know, he had sailed from Boston, I think, that you can check it out. And Reb Shmuel was crying, and Reb Shimon says to his Talmud, Venknish, Sivetzan good. It's going to be good in America, but I have to go back. And here you see, they're writing openly that America didn't want to let him go. What does that tell you? And I know as a fact what was going on, but his son-in-law and son were not on the same level. The yeshiva was falling apart. And they didn't want Grodno to fall apart. Here, no one believed me. Here's the article by Tova Hartman from the forewords. Why don't we wail over the Arab homes destroyed from our cult for our cult? I can't believe it. I can't believe it. Our father is gone. Go and ask him. It's unbelievable. David Hartman is dead.
I'm saying,
no, where
did he stand in the
whole issue? Do I know? I never even thought this would be an issue. I mourned that we didn't knock down the whole old city. It would be unbelievable. Gentlemen, if you read, I have to tell you, I'm blown away. This is from Friday's Yisrael Hayom. This is an article with a famous TV personality who became a Bala Tshuva. But this is not Breslov. This is not Chabad. These are Litvisha. You gotta read her description of feminism. She has been very prominent now that I see who her grandfather was, Mary Joy, and her father, very prominent home. This is exactly what we're gonna be doing in class with Reb Menashe Klein and the Rav and the feminine personality. She is fantastic. I couldn't
says
believe it.
Something similar?
Word by word. I don't know who's quoting who here, but word by word.
Who is it? What's her
name? Kammerman. You read the article. It's Mary Dua's granddaughter with her husband, and she's had a very good marriage even from before she was a Bala Tshuva. She was not a playgirl. It's a very admirable article. Chabad, the YU Club in Chabad with pictures of your friends learning and whatnot. I can't get over. It's a different YU today. No wonder I have to teach in Israel. They won't let me into Washington Heights. All right. That's Chabad and YU. This is a manuscript, very moving, of a young man at the time. His bar mitzvah, the Rebbe gave the drasha. This is before he became Rebbe. And they found the Ktav Yad of the Rebbe with his ha'arat on it of the bar mitzvah drasha he gave. I tell you, the archives come up with unbelievable. This is an interview with Mrs. Valerie Shaw, whose husband ran to be a congressman from Florida, didn't succeed, but show me Shabbos people and how the Rebbe encouraged them. Very interesting. This is a beautiful article on Rabbi Meir Soloveitchik, who just died, when he said Kaddish for his dear Chabad friend. And Ein Hachinami, Brisk and Chabad always got along. This is my student, the Baron Katz, who studied here in this very cold. I'm very proud of him. He's a lawyer living in Beit Shemesh. He writes here, Mamish Halacha, what do you do if you have, if you're a prisoner, and you the warden says, we'll leave you out of jail for one day, which day should you ask to be out of jail to do, let's say, you should say, Yom Kippur, I should be able to fast, Rosh Hashanah, to hear the shofar, which would you choose? New, very fascinating. By the way, my gut answer to this was exactly what one of the poskim say, but it's not for now. This is his eulogy for his Rebbe in Los Angeles. He's from Los Angeles originally, Rabbi David Landesman. This is Rabbi David Landesman, Zichron Levracha. I loved his writings. He was co-author of the biography of Rabbi Yosef Breuer. I quoted it when I dealt with the Germans, the Yekes, after World War II. It's a very top biography. Here's Anna Chabadnik in Belgium, who wants to stop anti-Semitism. Every rabbi, every Jew should carry a gun. I think in Belgium you can't do it, but I agree with him in Israel. As you all know, I told my grandchildren, whoever gets permission for a gun, Sabu is going to cover the cost. And so far, I now own one gun in the hands of one of my top grandchildren. The other one was turned down because he doesn't live in a high security area, etc. Moment magazine, you got to believe some of the articles here, gives you a taste of what's going on in the world of these general Jews in the United States. But there is an article, a beautiful article here, by a lady named Bialik, who's evidently an actress, Hollywood, who or in that area, who is a Balat Tshuva. And she writes very beautifully what the word Liyota Balat Tshuva means. Her name is, very interestingly, Mayim Bialik. She's related distantly to Reb Chaim Nachman Bialik.
Is that the one who used to be the actress?
Yeah, she is. And very, she writes very beautifully what the word Balat Tshuva means. And listen, I don't like that word because I can be a Balat Tshuva. You understand, Charlie? Mark can be a Baal Tshuva. He's a Talmud of Rabbi Barbara Brandspiegel. So we do, but this is finding out who you are. It's coming back to your real Jewish roots. Who am I? My dear students, I want to wish everyone a Chag Sameach B'Kasher. I don't agree with Kasher B'Sameach because Kasher today is not a problem. You don't make matzah by hand. If you buy all your Pesach products before Pesach, there is absolutely no way you can have a halachic problem. But because we work so hard, imagine, I'm going to tell my wife that, honey, leave the crumbs on the floor. Pirurim don't count. It's batel umavutel. Even when, you know what my wife would do to me? She would go crazy. Exactly. And the rabbi used to say this. But with all our effort, don't forget, Chag Sameach V'Kasher. And if you want to listen to me, make your homes kosher for Pesach 3 days before, 4 days before, then relax so that you can enjoy the Seder. In America, they have one advantage over us, the second Seder. The first Seder, everyone is asleep, the women in particular. The second Seder, at least they can keep awake. Here, Baruch Hashem, Osherad, as if this past Sunday was totally kasher l'Pesach. All you find in there are beans that we can eat. Outside of that, everything is fine, but we don't have. So you got to wake up early a few days before, finish up, you have what to eat, you don't have to eat matzah, there's egg matzah before Pesach, and then you can enjoy the Seder. Chag Sameach v'kasher aleinu v'al kol Yisrael. Thank you so much. And to meet again, Das Vedania.